the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Charlie McCarron.
I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And I'm Ananda Gunaratne.
And welcome to our wrap-up episode about trading card games, also known as collectible card games, yep. Customizable card games, whatever.
That card was collection.
Yes.
Game.
And what they really are mechanically is deck construction games, I think. Yeah. We used to be able to maybe say deck building games, but
that's
then
a
deck builder game became a thing. So
yep.
Deck construction trading card games are usually that, you know, you buy packs, open them up, and get some random cards, and then figure out what cards you want to put in your deck. So we've played three of them and talked about them in the past few episodes: Magic the Gathering, Pokemon trading card game, and Star Wars Unlimited. And yeah, they've all been fun and kind of a blast from the past for,
oh, yeah,
especially Pokemon.
Yeah. Even Magic for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just thinking about the term trading card games is kind of funny too, as we were talking about before the episode. I don't know, remember the last time I traded a card for another
card. Might have been when I was 13.
Yeah.
I remember the last time that I traded a card. It was a Pokemon card. And I didn't know anything about Pokemon. This was when I was a kid,
to be
clear.
Yeah.
In the first set, I had a Blastoise, and, you know, one of the shiny Blastoises that are, like, super valuable nowadays. And I traded it for a super potion because I didn't know anything about Pokemon cards. And I still remember that.
I would too.
That's not as sad as mine, where I traded a dual land for a card that was not nearly as good as the dual land in Magic. I won't even look up how much those are worth nowadays.
My dual parents. Lands.
Yeah. They're just like a regular land. Except they count as two different lands, no drawback.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, what? Hang on. When we were doing the draft, I remember seeing lands that were two lands, but they come into play tapped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No drawback.
Dual lands had no drawback. That's why
they're strictly better.
Oh, yeah. That's why they're extremely valuable and they got banned. But let's not talk about that. Regardless,
my parents were so paranoid about me not understanding the value of my Pokemon cards that they got me a book to tell me the value of them. And we all know that books are very good at staying up to date on this information. I'm pretty sure it said my Charizard was worth $15, and it was just like normal Charizard, like nothing special. It's like, I don't think this is 100% right.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that comes out of these kind of games is like how emotionally powerful they are, that we can remember these things and not just bad trades we made, but like, oh, this cool deck I made. And I think in terms of like games that stick with you, like thinking about how cool it was to make decks.
Well, and even us talking about the Turtle Duck in I think every episode of the series so far.
The card that single-handedly won me a game, even though it's a silly one-cost mana card.
Yeah, one-cost mana, 0/4, but if you pay 3, it's a 4/4 for that round.
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
Well, and I think like one of the main things that make these games so fun to play is the creativity that goes into it when you're building your deck. Like, that's a thing I've talked about a lot on the show. It's like we've talked about creativity. How can you be creative in the game beyond just like maybe the normal strategy? The normal definition of creativity sometimes, I don't know where I'm going with that. But
deck building is an opportunity to be creative. And really, the most fun thing, well, maybe I shouldn't say the most fun thing, but trying out a new build, like, you know, just building something and then seeing how it does in practice is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like, I've been playing Duelist more lately because you know, because we're doing this series and it made me think of it again. And it is fun just to put together a deck, play a game, and then go and tweak it a bit, and then play again, and just keep doing that.
Yeah, you get the what we've talked about before of like put together some strategy and see if it pays off. So you kind of get that feeling twice. It's like, okay, yeah. I have this strategy that I brought into the game, the very meta strategy, and then like the strategies you're doing during the game of, oh, I'm going to hold on to this card and hope that I can play it later.
Yeah, you know what that makes me think? It makes me imagine a game where you have, you know, where you say you have a draft, like we did with the Magic cards. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you wouldn't be ripping over open booster packs because you'd want the game to be replayable. But, you know, let's say you do a draft and then you build your deck from the cards. But then actually playing the game is just on autopilot, like an auto battler.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that, like, I think Challengers
is like that. But
Challengers does that, but on a very small scale. And in Challengers, there's no drafting. It's just you start out. It's more of a deck builder auto battler. I'm talking about like a draft auto battler.
Like a pick and pass kind of thing we did in Magic Draft.
So yeah. Do you know of any games like that?
I don't know.
That seems like a fun thing.
That does seem fun.
Even draft like auto battler.
Other games that I've seen that are like deck construction games, they're obviously not auto battlers. They try to do a lot of strategy and things in them. So for this, like if you have effects and things that are going off, they're just launching when they're revealed.
Yeah.
And you're hoping that you have the things built up at that point for it to trigger.
Yeah. That seems fun. Put all the focus on the draft. The event.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, then yeah. Yeah.
It takes a while, but it's
very Galaxy Trucker.
Yeah. I might look into something like that.
There's things in Magic style of drafting that called like a cube draft. Oh. I honestly don't know why it's called cube, but the idea is you have someone who has a lot of cards puts together a fun set to draft from.
Oh, okay.
So, which is really cool because they can then kind of craft these meta strategies that they might see and see if they pay off for people.
Oh, that's fun.
Like making a game around that seems really fun.
And I know there's a lot of like deck construction games where, you know, I think it's, what is it, Rise of the Phoenixborn or something like that is a, I think it was meant to be a trading card game originally or collectible card game. But instead of doing that, they just released it as a full game and you have all the cards with it. And then you build the decks and play them against each other. Mm. And so like it creates a self-contained game that is a deck construction game then. It's not a CCG or a TCG. I mean, it's expandable too. You can get, you know, different types of decks going on. But yeah. I think it's really interesting being able to have deck construction as part of a game. I'd be curious, like we talked during the Pokemon episode, there was these prizes. I would love to see that in more games. And I would be really curious if you could somehow add an element of almost deck building with deck construction, where you're like trying to figure out what cards will work best for where you're currently at. And you're able to choose different prizes based on certain credentials or criteria. Mm.
So like Pokemon, but your prize pool is face up.
Right. Where you get to have choices about it. And then maybe those are actually neutral cards that you deal out. And so they're not from your core deck. And so you're trying to get these really cool cards into your deck so you can use them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It'd be really cool just to see like what else you can do with it. But as we said, you know, in the Magic episode, you got to be really careful when you're trying to design a trading card game as a trading card game instead of just as a card game on its own, because it can be really hard to pitch that unless you have everything already.
Yeah.
Well, just one thought on that as you're saying that, thinking back to maybe it was your takeaway in the Pokemon episode, but I really liked that bench of Pokemon where you only have one active, but you have the five that are sitting there. That to me, it feels like this, you know, prizes idea. Like you have things waiting to be used and you don't know which one you're going to use it next. Like I actually had five on my bench most of the time that were just kind of sitting there.
Yeah.
But it felt good to have like options
Oh, like, yeah.
Okay, I now's lost the all time my
options. Yeah.
To use this.
Yeah.
So Mewtwo.
So actually, on the topic of, well, you know, how can I design a TCG mm-hmm. when it's so difficult to get it published?
Yeah, publish it yourself or have it published by someone else?
There is, yeah, well, there is actually one answer if you are savvy at programming,
yeah.
which is the, what would the acronym, TCRPGs, Trading Card Role-Playing Games.
Oh, okay.
Is a genre without very many entries in it. The only games I can think in it, think of off the top of my head are the Pokemon trading card game for the Game Boy.
Oh, okay.
And Inscription. I should say this is a mild spoiler for Inscription. But those are both games where the player exists in a world that to some extent has trading card games. Well, that has trading card games as conflict resolution and as the reward.
Oh, sure.
Actually, this is less the case in Inscription. But
Pokemon Game Boy game.
The Pokemon trading card game for Game Boy.
So,
which is distinct from.
So it went full circle.
Yeah.
Back into Game Boy
as a Game Boy game.
Okay.
And then became a trading card yes. game.
The original Pokemon, I played this myself back in the day. Okay. The original Pokemon trading card game for Game Boy is actually pretty good. So it's an RPG. So, you know, there's like a little world and there are characters and you go around and you talk to them.
I remember this, yeah.
Yeah. And at certain points, you challenge people to a Pokemon duel. And when you defeat them, they give you a booster pack,
oh, that's
which
right.
you then get to open.
That is fun.
It has all of the good, all of the appealing qualities of trading card games. Like, okay, you fight them, you get booster packs. Maybe they give you a special card. This doesn't happen in real life, but they gave you a really powerful card from your deck when you beat them. Some of them, they have cards that they're willing to trade for your cards. Like all of the sort of the fantasy of the trading card game,
yeah.
of which in real life the what is it called, the ante mechanic for Magic, which never took off.
Oh sure,
where the game forces you to give other people actual cards.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that very weird mechanic. But in a video game, it works. And more specifically, the reason why I think TCRPGs are a great place to go if you want to make a trading card game and you're willing to do some programming is that you don't – trading card games normally need a critical mass of people to support them,
right,
customer-wise. But in a video game, you don't. You can just have the player and they can go around. They can collect cards, which they get as rewards from accomplishing things in the world. There can be a storyline. And they can play against all of these NPCs that use, just AI to play the game against you. And it feels pretty good. And if you really want multiplayer, that's also easy to implement because you can just, digitally play against other people who also play the game.
You just don't have to have the AI active. Then you just have a player too.
Right.
And take turns.
And even if you don't have a critical mass of people, it's fine because you can still just play the single player campaign.
Right.
So I think if you want to make a TCG, that's what you do.
I think that's a great idea. Learning the programming might be a little bit of a barrier for folks, but not as much as publishing a trading card game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
go ahead.
I was going to say a special call out before I forget. Millennium Blades is like a card game version of that, but it's a card game version of you playing a trading card game. So it's not a trading card game, but you are pretending to be a character in the game who is going through tournaments and playing trading card games. It's very meta, but I remember it really scratching that itch really well. I really should look into it again. It's been so long.
It's funny you mentioned like coding, because last night I was actually feeling inspired. Like, that was my original desire, was to make video games.
Same.
That's how I got into coding. And I kind of had the itch last night, like, maybe I'll learn Godot and learn from Ananda about it. But I think one thing that board games have a harder time of doing, but CCGs kind of have an advantage on, is that you have this feeling of exploration in a video game. Like, yeah. I go out, this you talking about this Pokemon trading card game sounds so cool, because it's like, oh, I don't know what exists in this universe. Sure, right. Let's go out and explore. That's why Pokemon is just so fun in general. You're discovering these things. And any trading card game is like that. For one, you're opening a pack, literally a mystery pack. You don't know what's going to be in there. But like, just knowing the expansive universe of Magic, having 27,000 cards. But I mean, before the internet, that would have been felt even better. Like,
oh yeah,
I'm going to dig through this box of cards at a store and exploring. So
yeah,
basically that's my takeaway maybe from this chat is like the feeling of exploration and like, ooh, how can these combos work?
The discovery and that combining with the creativity of how do I make these things work together?
Yeah.
And have this really cool maybe synergy happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the three games that we talked about have fairly different resource systems.
Yeah.
I mean, not immensely different, but like, you know, you've got Magic with the lands that are in your deck, and then you've got Pokemon where it's kind of also lands, but now they're attached to the Pokemon, and they're not nearly as permanent. And then you have, of course, Star Wars, where you can use anything as a resource, and it's just sort of ramping up, similar to Hearthstone or Duelist, where you just get constantly more generic resources over time. But I was just thinking, you know, what other resource systems are there? Because it feels like the resource system of the game does lend it a lot of its character.
So I talked about this very briefly off a podcast. The game I've been playing a little bit is called Together in Battle. It's a tactical RPG, but they have a mini game that is a trading card game. And they basically do a 4-lane combat. You play creatures effectively, and you just start at the top and play down. You get 2 action points per turn, but you can save them between turns. And so you could end up with having 6, as 6 is your capacity.
Oh.
And then you can have other things go into those lanes that are like generators that produce more energy, but they can't attack. Mm. And then they could be attacked by the other thing on the other lane and be destroyed. And so little things like that are actually really interesting and kind of fun to play around with, where you have a slight control over the economic engine of your deck and of your play style. So I really like those kind of things.
Yeah. Thinking about resources, there's 2 other Richard Garfield games that come to mind.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
One being Keyforge, which is essentially like a trading card game, except that...
Trading deck game.
Yeah, you get a whole deck that is totally unique combination of cards from a set. And I just love how you bring in cards in that game, because instead of paying for them, there's going to be 3 different colors in your deck of the 6 possibles. And you just pick 1 color, and that's the cards you can play and the cards you can activate. So it's constant tension around like, okay, I have a bunch of these green cards in my hand. So cool, I can play those. But then on the next turn, I'm probably going to have less green cards in my hand. Do I pick another color so I can play more creatures, or do I pick green again so that I can activate them? And the thing that I love about Keyforge is that some of these creatures are really crazy and big, and the balance is not so much a thing.
Like a concern?
Yeah, big concern, because also the decks are somewhat internally balanced, I think. But the other Richard Garfield game that came after that, I believe. Mindbug. I don't know if you guys have played that.
No.
It's really fascinating. It's also not a TCG, but you play, I believe, you draw from the same deck, or you split the deck. Anyways, it's similar to Keyforge or Magic and so on, attacking each other. But the cool thing is, 2 times during the game you can use your mind bug, which is so every turn you play a creature, and they can be wildly different values. But if you want, you can use a mind bug to steal the creature that your opponent just played.
Whoa.
So it's all about timing and like, do I think they have a better creature coming out?
Oh, interesting. So it has to be a response to them.
So the players
responding.
The players basically have to balance their own plays. They don't want to put something too strong.
Right.
That makes me think of Dvorak, the gnomic card game, because in that game, you can just make up whatever you want as a card,
right.
But all of the cards go together into a central deck.
Yeah.
So
you don't want to make it too powerful because you may not get it.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That feels a little bit like that to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and I hope I'm not misremembering how it plays, but it's such a cool thing. It's like building off of what he does in Magic with counter spells.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's many cards in Magic that let you steal your opponent's creature, mm-hmm. but he basically just was like, that's such a fun mechanic. That can be this whole game. Yeah.
Well, and I was even talking about for the Star Wars episode where I wanted to have like a secondary thing that you can do. And that's exactly that, right? You have this secondary thing you can engage with. And like, if you are in trouble with what you currently have going on, you can just do that to help you figure out your current problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really neat.
The players have to self-police not playing above the curve.
Yeah. And once per game things, I'm starting to realize are really fun.
Yeah.
Like,
and you know it can happen.
Yeah.
So is it going to happen?
Yep.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And once it happens, it can't happen again.
Yeah.
Once per game, Star Wars Unlimited.
Right.
You get the leader coming out. Mm-hmm. You know it's coming.
To say that during the episode, that the leader can only take the field once per game.
Yeah.
I don't think I said that.
Yeah.
But yeah. And yeah.
Yeah.
It's having those cool game-changing moments is really important.
Yeah. I mean, for my part, I think my favorite resource system that I've seen in a TCG or TCG-like is probably from Inscription, where there are different resources. I'll try not to spoil too much. And they work radically different in terms of how you get them. So to give you an example that's you can see early in the game, there's blood and bones, and you get blood by sacrificing your creatures. So like if a creature costs blood to summon it, you have to kill that many of your creatures and then play it into play. Bones work differently. Bones are a resource you get whenever one of your creatures dies for any reason. So if you sacrifice a creature, it creates a bone. If your creature is killed by your opponent's creature, you get a bone. And then once you have enough bones, you can spend them to summon other creatures. And I love this because first of all, the resources feel very different. And it also encourages you to have creatures that use all the types of resources that you're generating. Because if you don't have any bones creatures in your deck, I should also say each creature only costs one type of resource.
Oh, sure.
So if you don't have any bones creatures in your deck, then all of the bones that you're generating are going to waste.
Yep.
And also when you sacrifice a creature, it feels like you're getting double the value because, okay, I sacrificed it to make this creature, and now I can use the bones from the sacrificed creature to do something else as well.
That does feel good. That's
cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to play that some more. I do have that, and I've only played a few rounds of it.
It's a very cool mechanic. And I love the idea of having multiple different resources that you get in different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think just as a, general thing for designers to think about is like, can you turn things on their head that is normally like a cost or something that feels bad? Can you flip it so that actually, no, it's now neutral or feels good for doing this thing that's as simple as like paying a cost.
right.
Yeah, which happened over the course of Richard Garfield's career in designing, going from Magic, like, oh, lands can screw you over if you didn't draw any.
Right.
To like
Netrunner. You can just play whatever.
Yeah, to like then Netrunner, you get actions to do things. And then...
Mm-hmm.
Keyforge, just pick a color and play that, and
the cost becomes an opportunity cost in Keyforge.
Yeah,
which is nice because it feels like it's free.
Yeah.
It feels like it's free, but then you realize the real cost. It's like, oh, but then I can't. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, we've talked about TCGs a fair bit, and I guess one thing about TCGs is the business model, obviously, mm-hmm. which relies heavily on randomized booster packs, mm-hmm. Which one question is this ethical, like selling things in this way? Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. It's all very well to say, well, people can just not buy it if they don't want it. But
right.
it is tapping into the same part of the brain that becomes addicted to gambling.
Right. That's why loot boxes and video games were being heavily, I don't want to say monitored, that's not the right term, but looked at by the public, because it's like, oh, hey, my kid has been using our money that we had synced to like buy him games, and he's just been buying these loot boxes.
Yeah.
And like just spending a lot of money on a digital content that, yeah, they made the art for, but that doesn't cost them anything to like give them access to it.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so it's tapping into that addictive...
It,
yeah.
It drives people to buy pack after pack after pack.
Yeah.
And, you know, like...
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that ethical?
There's less ethical things out there, I guess. But, yeah, I don't know. I think...
It's hard to blanket it as a black and white situation, too. Only because... there's a lot of economic activity around trading card games, obviously, because of that same behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And
like people reselling cards for.
Oh, I'm more talking about local game stores
right.
being able to function.
Oh, yeah.
Because
true.
Of trading card yep. games and because of games like Warhammer 40K, where, you know, you have these big investment folks that are spending money at these game stores that maybe the casual hobbyist just isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're able to actually keep their doors open because of that model. And so, like, it's tough to... I really like the groups or the stores that are selling individual cards and have, like, big old binders and books of where you just go in and buy a single card and perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a great way to kind of strike a balance there. But I agree, like, tapping into that addictive part of the brain... is not great, but we do it in game design a lot too. We look for those things that are exciting that trigger that positive response.
That's true, but we
it's not economically damaging when we do it in a game.
Right. Yeah,
if
we're
it's
not
closed.
The yeah. you have fun while you're playing the game, but right. it's not like you're paying extra money to have that yeah. fun.
Unless you are trying to get more expansions or more content for it because you really love it and you really want to do it more. Like it's, but the randomization, I think, is what you're going after.
Yeah.
Is the uncertainty of what you get.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there was a time when it seemed like maybe CCGs were going to die off.
Yeah. They
because,
were...
like, I remember this when I was an intern when Fantasy Flight was releasing Star Wars Destiny. And I was kind of surprised, actually, at the time that they're like, yeah, we're going to do a CCG. And because they had done LCGs, which mm-hmm. is living card games, which is this, you get the full set, like Dominion or other deck builders, where there's a contained amount of cards and make the deck from there.
Well, I love living card games
yeah.
as a model.
Yeah,
because you know what you're going to get. You could get a $15 yeah. pack. And you are given the list of cards of what is going to be, like, okay, great.
Yeah.
Awesome. It's not random.
Yep.
That's what's coming.
And it seemed like, oh, this is the way now. Like,
yeah.
no gamers are going to want to get a CCG again after you have this opportunity to just have the full set.
Right.
And it's like, no, people nah. actually just enjoy getting random goodies.
Well, honestly, there's something about drafts that is very different. Like, if you're just talking about buying booster packs from a store and, like, hoping you got a high-value card or, you know, a rare card, that's one thing. But if you're participating in a draft, to me, that felt very different than what I used to feel when I'd open a booster pack.
No, that's a fair point. Drafting is quite a unique experience.
Yeah.
Although, it might be possible still to replicate it. Well, like I was saying earlier, you know, I had the idea of a drafting auto battler.
Yeah. You should make that. Which that sounds fun.
I think that I think that is specifically going to be my takeaway. Is that game idea.
Perfect.
You should do it.
Yeah, it's tough because I don't want to say I've been anti trading card games, but I was addicted to it as a kid, especially Pokemon, but a little bit Magic too. And obviously I had an allowance. I couldn't actually get in deep with, you know, the Pokemon people. But yeah, I think there is a good balance, and I think finding it's about that discovery too. And how do you separate the discovery excitement from the addiction of, oh, I need more packs. I need more packs. Like, the discovery is a lot of fun, mm-hmm. and that it should be. Because that's part of what we enjoy about games is discovering them.
And it's interesting when you look at digital TCGs also, or I guess maybe they should be called digital CCGs because I don't know if it's even possible to trade cards with the digital versions. But like thinking about Duelist and Hearthstone, well, they're very different because I think Hearthstone comes out with new content a lot more frequently than Duelist does.
Sure.
So maybe it's not feasible to get all the Hearthstone content. Duelist does not have as much content. And I have or am able to spend the in-game shards that you earn by playing, shards? No, coins. Whatever the currency is, to unlock the cards that I want. So, like in digital, and I imagine this is somewhat common in digital collectible games, which is that if you really want something, you know, there's a resource you can spend to just get it. And also the randomized packs are delivered as a form of progression. Yeah. Like just by playing the game, you earn the packs that you can open. And if you want to pay them money to get more packs sooner, you can, but it's not essential to play the game.
Sure.
I was curious. We know what Ananda would do for a trading card game now.
Oh, man.
Trevor, do you have a thought on if you're going to design a TCG?
If I was to design, I'm trying to think. I would probably do what I was saying, again, off podcast earlier, and have it be more of an economic trading card game than a combat card game. I don't know if that would be well received at all because there's a lot of competition in the trading card game space in terms of you want to, you know, win a game, win a match. But I want to have it be where it's more about growing what you have instead of just attacking the others. Yeah, so I'd want to focus on that element.
It's interesting because I can't think of any TCGs that are about that are economic rather than combat.
And it seems like probably why is because, well, economic type games are usually doing your own thing.
Yep.
So it feels weird to be like, I'm going to bring my deck to play against you.
Yeah.
Who can make the better economic engine on their own? But it's almost like you need an interface in the middle that's...
Yeah, and it could be... This is combining two thoughts I've had today so far. But pursuing my game about stocks and owning companies with this concept, and you're competing over the different companies and doing like corporate sabotage, but also trying to build up your engine for creating more things...
So, I mean, I can think of one set of economic games that are quite interactive, and it's splatter games.
Oh, of course.
I mean, think about it. Like, you could be competing over customers,
right,
similar to Food Chain Magnate,
right,
or competing over a limited pool of shared resources. Yeah, like
even Boss Monster, you know, competing over the heroes that are going to come through your dungeons.
Yeah.
You want more resources or more of that symbol than that person.
Right, yeah. In an economic game, just because you're not fighting each other directly doesn't mean there can't be interaction.
Yeah.
It's just like the interaction is more about... your ability to get some limited number of resources of some sort.
Yeah, yeah. So you're trying to hire people or do certain things or attract certain things.
Maybe the cards in your deck are creating resources for both players to fight over, which is sort of how Splatter works.
Well, okay, so I did think of one. Netrunner is actually...
Oh,
it's because it's combat-y in the sense that the runner is running at the corporation.
Right, but the corporation doesn't care about the runner.
The corporation, yeah. It does not do anything to the runner that's directly. Not based on what the runner is doing to them.
Right.
Yeah. Essentially.
The corporation is playing an economic game. The runner is playing like
attack.
Attack.
Yeah.
Game.
Yeah, if you haven't played Netrunner, try it out. It's one of the coolest. We have an episode on it.
Yeah, we have an episode on it.
We've done a lot of episodes, so if you're curious, we mentioned Mage Wars a lot in this series.
Yeah, go check out the Mage Wars episode.
Yeah.
I still want to play Mage Wars again.
Well, yep. We can.
I know. We just we have to have time where we can just play a game instead of for the podcast, and that's the hard part.
We decided that eventually we're going to like go through our favorite hits of... games we've played and revisit those just on our own.
Yeah. And I'm realizing, I was just thinking to myself today, and this is, not a spoiler because we haven't actually talked about it. I want to revisit deck builders at some point, but modern, new deck builders, because there have been some that have been coming out in the past year or two that are really changing how deck builders work.
Ooh.
Mm. And I'm really excited about it. So
I want to do that too.
Yeah.
Eventually, when we run out of mechanics to do, we'll just do part two. So
the year was 2035.
Hey, we could still be doing this 10 years from now. I hope we are.
10 years. How many episodes is that? It's a lot.
Two years was 100.
Yeah.
So
500 episodes?
Yes.
We so can get there. We'll just... Maybe we just expedite it a little bit. We just do two episodes a week for a while. No, I'm kidding. We're not going to do that.
Did you give a takeaway?
Oh, I didn't give a takeaway. I was withholding because I'm not... I think my takeaway is going to be playing with kind of the space that the characters are in the trading card game. So each one of these had a different way of framing... the space. Magic is a very open, like, you have all these creatures out, you can have any number, you have tokens and things. Mm-hmm. Pokemon, you have one creature going head to head, and then you have a bench, like, and then we have space versus ground for Star Wars, and those keep separate except they can both attack the base. I think if you are going to try to make something unique, you have to adjust something in that space, and I think that will actually help make it feel very different than something else.
And I guess it seems like the defining feature of space is what can interact with what.
Exactly.
Like Pokemon, just 1v1, or Magic, everyone interacts.
And this is just a fun thought. What if something played in one space was different than if it was played in another space? Like the
pixel
resources.
Pixel tactics.
Yeah.
What is that?
So pixel tactics, it's not a TCG, but it's a card game. Where you have a 3x3 grid of zones where you can play your your guys from your hand. And each of the cards that you have, which represents a character, has a different ability depending on whether it's in the front row, the middle row, the back row, or whether you assign it as your leader.
Oh, wow.
Which is cool. In practice, I found it to be a bit overwhelming, the amount of information.
I got through an intro of it once, and I was like, I can't think of all this. But it's cool. It's a cool idea.
That would be one thing to watch out for.
Yeah.
If you're doing that.
Yeah.
You don't want it to be overwhelming.
Yeah. Radlands is like that, too. I don't know if you've seen that.
Oh, sure.
But, front row is the one that's more actively attacking. And then as they die off, like, you go deeper into... Yeah. There's like three lanes, I want to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
That reminds me a little bit of another RPG I play that's called Thea, T-H-E-A. And it's kind of a economic RPG set in Eastern European fantasy stuff. It's a lot of fun, but their whole mechanic revolves around having cards combat each other that are people. So you can improve their stats with equipment and things. And since it's digital, it just automatically updates the card, which is great. But then you can go through different types of challenges where you have fights, where, your swords and shields matter. But then you can have mental challenges where those things don't matter at all. And so you're using different stats for the characters, and they're trying to, attack these different things that are like concepts. But then the concepts can deal them damage. And like, yeah, it's really cool. But yeah, that's just a simple two lane, like front row, back row. And then like back row, maybe you have like range characters that can do range things, and but they can't do melee attacks from the back row.
Yeah. I really like your idea, Trevor, of a game that is not just about combat. I enjoy all these kind of games where you're fighting each other, but I think it's really fun when there's a second element that you're working on that's more heady than just damaging.
And food chain magnet TCG.
Okay, yeah.
Going for the objectives.
Yep.
But
well, awesome. This was a really fun series. I feel like we upped our average episode length for TCGs, but
just a little bit.
A very exciting topic for us to chat about. So looking forward to the next series with you guys.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.